放つ風よ時の傘へこの想いはいざよいに凛とした届かないまま震え上だから消えたあなたの空を飛ぶ蝶になれるのならその悲しみ苦しみを食らい尽くす鬼でも構わない放つ風よ時の朝へこの
You just listened to Azayoi Namira from the anime Hakukoki Shinsengu Mikitan by the artist Aika Yoshioka. Of course, this is the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast session 33, continuing to make your anime addiction worse. Mitsugi is here with me.
How you doing?
And as has been the trend lately, we have one of the things we love to have, a guest host!
Yay!
Yay! Insert applause here. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hey, I know this is supposed to be the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, but rather than be anonymous, I'm just going to give you my name. I'm Daryl Surratt. I have an anime podcast of my own, the Anime World Order podcast, and I am a freelance contributor to Otaku USA Magazine, for which the latest issue is on newsstands now.
All right. Pick it up.
Hot off the press.
Yeah.
Woo. Steamy. Of course, you can find us at aaapodcast.com, 3 A's, iTunes, Facebook, Mevio, and the ADD Network. If you search for AAA Podcast or Anime Addicts Anonymous Podcast on any of those, we should come up, no problem. Normal announcements, of course, we have our special guest host, yay. We
also I don't have Facebook. I don't even know what Mevio or addnetwork.net is, but I'm just tremendously out of the loop as far as what's internet cool.
No.
You're cool with us.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's...
And we define cool here, apparently.
We do?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's go with that. New forum members.
So... I don't even have a forum. Man, you guys got it all together here.
I'm the web mistress for the podcast, and I like building stuff.
She does it all. I just kind of sit there and go, that's pretty. Nice job.
Oh, the things that I enjoy doing, rather pulling my hair out over. Anyways, Sib Nova, who is Scott from the Sarcasm Podcast, hi Scott, has joined our forums. Nina Mustang joined, Leader, Solbro Ryu, who is another friend from the Gundam Podcast, an awesome podcast as well, I might say.
Hey Solbro.
UMMX, Matteru, Amuro1X, Frack 9123 and Andreg have all joined the forum. So the trivia winner from last round was Anarchy. The song was Ready, Set, Go.
Yeah, that was like the easiest trivia question we've ever had, I think.
I like audio trivia, so I decided to put that up. New trivia question will be posted, whatever, that kind of thing. Character battle will be started by the time that you hear this. If you have not made a bracket...
Too late.
You suck. I mean, too late. But...
What is the character battle? Is it like on Game Facts where it's really depressing, where it's like you have to vote between like Cloud Strife or Akuma from Street Fighter?
That's exactly what it is.
Nobody votes for Akuma?
You totally pegged me. I basically just ripped off their whole idea, and I'm trying to do it with anime. And the bracket's on bracketmaker.com. So we're not like... I mean... God, I wish our website had even like 1% of the traffic that GameFAQs has, but I guess that'll probably never happen.
I'm surprised that you never asked me if I could integrate the brackets into the website.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised.
I just figured you'd, like, try to maul me like a bear.
I probably would have.
You'd hire the grizzly bear off the forum to come maul me.
I would. Thank you, grizzly bear, for apparently being my personal bodyguard. But, yes, if you have not made a bracket, you can still participate in the character battle by going to the main page and voting on the polls right at the top, and please do so, because that will help us out.
Yes.
And it should be good fun.
Yeah.
So, now that all the announcements are out of the way, we really need to stop doing things. We have way too much to announce.
We're only 5 minutes.
It feels like more.
It does.
It does. Right. I don't know. Daryl is going to jump into the Chiaki hot seat and let me interview him, first up. And then we're going to take a news break, and then we're going to discuss new anime versus old anime, which was suggested by Plixic. Which was suggested...
Sounds like, you know, he lives in the fourth dimension, or the dimension that really Superman dude lives in.
Seriously, something like that. So anyway, thank you, Plixic, for your suggestion. Yes, new versus old anime suggested by Plixic. And then another news break. We'll do some reviews. And it'll just be a grand old time all around.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And then we're going to go have sushi afterwards.
I'm not a sushi fan.
Yeah, I might just have some, like, ramen. Good for the soul.
Well, I normally get, like, the soba noodles, because that's... I don't like the seaweed, personally, but it's just me. I can't get around that.
Like, imagine being the person who comes home and it's like, you know, seaweed's on the plate. It's like, what is it? Like, oh, I'm home, my little mackerel fish.
You're so punny. So, Daryl, nice. Welcome to our podcast. Welcome to the hot seat. As it's been kind of tradition, I'm going to do a mini interview with you.
All right.
I will ask you all kinds of engaging questions and try to throw you off your game.
Oh.
Not really.
Okay.
So is there anything you want to start off by saying anything about yourself or Anime World Order podcast, where to find it, what you guys do, those kind of nice little pluggy type things?
Yeah, the pluggy type stuff. Well, the website is pretty simple to remember, www.animeworldorder.com. And we are on iTunes and, you know, all that good stuff as well. Kind of have to be in order to get listened to on a podcast. I hate iTunes. I don't understand why people use it, but everyone uses it. I'm not even subscribed to my own podcast. That's how pathetic I am. But most people who listen to podcasts do so through iTunes. So are on there.
I'm interested. What is it about iTunes that irks you so much?
I just don't like how it screws up all your codecs and stuff like that when you install it, because they also insist on throwing in the QuickTime and all that.
Oh.
Plus, you have to synchronize and do all this junk. It's like, just give me a media player, or I plug it in, it shows up like a hard drive, and I just drop my files in and call it a day. It's like this whole synchronization jazz, you know, you can put things on, but you can't delete. It's like, nah, the heck with it.
You know what? You know what?
No, go ahead.
I have a MacBook, but I never use QuickTime ever. I only ever use VLC, and that's it.
Oh, I don't even use VLC. But yeah, I mean, anyway, yeah, as far as the podcast is concerned, I don't know. We might die because I just turned 30, and that's old man age as far as anime fans go.
Oh,
if you ever go to a convention, I'm pretty sure the median age is about 14 or 15 years old. So that makes me twice as old as most anime fans now.
Wow. We're both terrible. You're not that much older than I am.
Okay, good.
It's only creepy if you act creepy. That's my...
Well, we're creepy people. That's why we're on this podcast. I mean, look, the name of it is, podcast.
Yeah, speaking of names, how did you guys come up with the name Anime World Order? Like, did that
funny story. It's a funny story. I mean, one of our co-hosts, Clarissa, it was her idea to start a podcast. I didn't even know what a podcast was at this time. And so we talked about it and said, oh, yeah, we could do this, that, and the other thing. What are we going to call it? Oh, I don't know. And then months would pass and nothing would happen. And then eventually I said, okay, let me throw out some names. And I said, okay, well, how about we be the Anime Illuminati? And they said, no, because the people who read the Da Vinci Code will find us and they'll get us, because this is around the time that that thing was hot. And so I said, all right, I'll call it the Anime World Order, and I'll make this logo very hastily in MS Paint and then say, here's a name and here's a logo.
You made that an MS Paint?
Yes, it's an MS Paint. You know, well, I mean, it's based off the NWO logo, the New World Order.
Yeah.
Professional wrestling. All I did was change the A in there and then change it to say anime. Very quickly in MS Paint. And then I said, here's a name, here's a logo. Anyone else got any better ideas? No. So as you learn from creating things in anime, creating things in a fandom, stupid idea versus no idea, stupid always wins. And that's how we got the name, Anime World Order. It's not very spectacular. And to this day, we have not changed the logo. I'm pretty knowledgeable about professional wrestling and such, so I figured, okay, I'll put that in there. Whenever we go to conventions and wear a shirt, my co-hosts get annoyed because people walk up to them and think they know about wrestling, and they don't.
They should just start making things up and be, like, really serious. Like, oh,
you're
yeah.
Like, what, you aren't caught up with that? You don't know? That's pretty much where it came into. We've been doing this for entirely too long. I mean, the podcast started in 2005 or thereabouts, back when everyone thought podcasting was going to be, like, the big, hot thing. Nah, it never really happened. That never really came to pass. But, yeah, I mean, about 4 years.
Wow.
That's pretty long by podcast age.
That's like, I mean...
That said, we're very, very lazy. There aren't, you know, a huge amount of episodes out.
I mean, I consider that a success, though. I mean, 5 years, I mean, to be...
Yeah, to keep it together for that long.
I mean, that says, I mean, it's hard. It's, I don't know.
It's easy to record. It's hard to edit.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
Especially since none of us on our podcast, like, are willing to ever shut up. And so when we first started, we were like, oh, we got to edit this down and make the segments, like, whatever time. And then we just were like, screw it. We're just going to talk for an hour each and call it a day. Now, we are trying now to release shorter segmented bits because, I mean, the number one complaint was our podcast was way too long. And so now we're trying to keep it to about an hour, 90 minutes, thereabouts. Like what you guys are already doing. See? Lead by example.
We've been getting,
negative example.
We've been getting, like, longer and longer. Like, when we first started, I wanted to be, like, 45 minutes, but...
Yeah, ideal podcast length, according to, like, the Merlafferties of the world.
45 minutes?
Yeah, 30 to 45 minutes in length. That's supposedly how long people are willing to listen, or the average commute, anyway.
Can't even, like, barely even say anything in 30 minutes.
Well, I certainly can't. Hi, and you can get one review in. The end. So, Daryl, happy belated 30th birthday. As you said, it was your birthday, so happy belated.
All right.
How much?
I could drop dead at any minute, though.
Really?
Yeah, that's the rule. I mean,
gotcha.
You can't live the life of an otaku for very long because you're, you know, betraying the natural order of things. Eventually, you're going to get struck down. And generally speaking, 30 is about the age when that happens.
So, well, I'll
so
put
I
this,
could just die at any minute.
I'll put this as our pre-death exclusive episode.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Pre-OED, prior to otaku expiration date.
Actually, no, but it's post. You are 30. Now we're on borrowed time.
It's like Gattaca, you know, like yeah. They calculate it, but then afterwards it's just who knows.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So how much of your time in those 30 years have you spent dedicated to being an otaku and watching anime and things like that?
I would say over half at this point because I started watching anime knowing it was anime in, I would say, roughly 1992 or 1993 or thereabouts, which doesn't seem like it's that long ago, but it's like, oh, wow, wait a second, that is over 15 years. I mean,
I feel so old.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. But yeah, I mean, it preceded the notion of BitTorrent, preceded DVDs. I mean, preceded even like a lot of companies existing that released anime commercially in America. So it was a totally different scene back then. You'd be very glad to watch whatever anime got put on TV, no matter what. I would say every single anime fan I knew, which is say almost none, was watching Sailor Moon when it was on TV in the mid-90s because it was anime.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not it was, you know, a girl show or a guy show or whatever. It's like, anime, everyone has to watch this cartoon. So back then, I mean, the big thing was Robotech, which was this very very loose adaptation, as it were, of three different cartoons combined into one, the most notable being Macross. Nowadays, you can get all these shows on DVD, uncut, and if you want it, anyway. Nowadays, people don't even know what a lot of these shows are.
Oh,
but
man.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been watching the Japanese cartoons, but yeah, I would definitely say I am that 90s era fan.
So in that time, Daryl, what would be your personal favorite anime? Or maybe most people have a problem with picking a favorite, but if not like a favorite, an anime that might be like dear to you or special to you, or that you could watch multiple times over and not get sick of, and why?
It is very difficult for me to pick a number one. I usually can't do it at all. I usually can't even rank things like a top 10. I just kind of have, I like this, I don't like that. But typically, I think a lot of the titles that people sort of associate me with, because I guess I talk about them a lot, I like Giant Robo, The Day the Earth Stood Still, a 7-part OAV that came out. Took a while to come out, but nowadays it's all in one set and gets super cheap. It's like $10 for everything.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably like one of the best I've ever seen, or at least, you know, near and dear to my heart. As far as what you can't get in America, I'm a big fan of the Superdimensional Fortress Macross movie, Do You Remember Love? That's a really great film. Still holds up to this day. Really, really excellent animation, and maybe we can get into that in one of our later segments that you talked about at the beginning of the program. I'm also, you know, this wasn't initially one of my favorites, but I seem to be, like, further and further associated with this cartoon as time goes on, but Fist of the North Star, which was kind of like where all those shonen fighting shows come from that are always the biggest popular thing, like Naruto and Dragon Ball and Bleach and all that, they all kind of draw from this Fist of the North Star template, as it were, except Fist of the North Star is the one where like a lot more people died, so you know, it automatically gets a pass for me.
There needs to be more death in anime.
I think so. It's just it's an issue between anime from when I was coming into things and anime now, with the fact that just so much of it is now made on TV instead of like theatrical films or straight to video. There's stuff you can get away with in those media that you can't do on television. So fewer deaths in anime now, unfortunate. For me, anyway.
Especially these moe characters. I wish some of them would just die, you know?
Well, I think that is the hot new thing now, to have the moe characters die, because it's emotion porn. It's canon, or canon, or whatever, or clonod.
Oh my god, I need to... I should tap into a new market. Instead of porn doujinshi, death doujinshi.
I'm pretty sure that is what these visual novels are all about. It's
really?
Yeah, it's all about, like, falling, you know, having feelings for the helpless girl, and then having the girl die so you feel bad.
So. That sounds like a feel-good time to me.
Hey, I'm not one of those people. I'm just saying that is the trend.
Okay.
So you said you were podcasting for, like, 4 years?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it's been, I would say late 2005 is when we started, but, you know, December 2005 till now. It's about 4 years and change. We can't even keep track of what our proper anniversary dates are. I think if you go to the Anime World Order site and look at our archives of all the past shows, I think we might actually be miscounting them. it's like part of our old age.
It's like a marriage. You start to forget after a couple, you know.
Doesn't really matter past a point, right? But
yeah.
Do you have, like, a favorite moment or memory from, like, podcasting, like, where something really funny happened, or you had maybe, like, a cool guest on, or, I don't know, maybe, like, the first time you were listened to something?
It definitely, I've got a few moments. I think when we first started the podcast, the idea was if we can get 100 listeners or 50 people to listen or something like that, then I'm fine. And we've got, you know, a good bit more than that now. So, I mean, that was quickly met. I think about 50 or so people might have tuned in for the first episode, even. Now there's, you know, quite a bit more. But yeah, as long as there's 100 people willing to listen, I'm like, okay, I'm good. But as far as like favorite moments, I think podcasting has really opened the door as far as like letting me meet a lot of people that I never would have met otherwise. Not just other anime podcasters or other anime fans, but sometimes you're even able to like fake your way in as press for like conventions and stuff like that. and get interviews with the guests. We've done some podcast interviews with a couple of people, but I think maybe the most notable one that we might have done would probably be a Japanese guest by the name of Noboru Ishiguro, who's actually the director of the Super Dimensional Fortress Macross and Legend of the Galactic Heroes, which is also one of my top anime of all time, to answer your previous question. Longtime veteran of the anime industry, really, really smart guy. We also interviewed Masaru Maruyama, who's you know, the guy who's kind of in charge of Madhouse, which is a really famous anime studio. Stuff like that would probably say be my favorite moments in podcasting, and also reviewing really terrible things. This seems to be kind of what we're sort of known for. We don't do it that often, but a lot of people really, for some reason, like to listen to that stuff, particularly this one called Odin, Photon Space Sailor Starlight. Really, really never-ending, terrifying film of epic proportions. One of the biggest, like, flops in anime history. Like, the super expensive, but just, you know, really inscrutable film. Those are some of my highlights, at least, for podcasting. How about you guys? Do you like to review, like, really ridiculous things, or...
I mean, it's always kind of fun when you have something that you can just rant about how terrible it is, and I think it's also somewhat therapeutic after having sat through something that's atrocious to just get it off your chest.
Yeah, the real trick, though, is that there isn't a whole lot of anime that's that level of bad. You know what I'm saying? Most anime is in this very middle ground, like, you know, eh, it's okay, or eh, it's kind of bad, or whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't really get you, like, really, really happy or really, really upset. I try to stick with just anime that I think is, you know, excellent in whatever way or direction you want to take that. It excels at either being great or it's bad in such a way that it's very memorably bad. And that's kind of where I like to review things in.
You know, I just looked up this Odin Starlight Mutiny movie that you just mentioned.
Oh, Odin Starlight Mutiny is actually the cut shorter version, but it is on Netflix streaming, so you wouldn't have to pay to watch it that way. The full version is 20 minutes longer and includes a super secret ending that I will not reveal right now.
It's too secret. This movie's 2 hours and 20 minutes as it is. I can't believe it. And the average ranking on Anime News Network is a 4. That's pretty bad.
4 is way higher. I think people are trying to spike that.
Well, 2 people gave it... Out of the 84 ratings, it does have 2 people think it's a 9, so...
They probably listen to our show and are trying to trick people.
Oh my god.
Whereas I personally voted Apocalypse Zero 10, as well as Mad Bull. I stand by those ratings.
I gotta find this older version. You I can't even find the one that's older. Anyway.
Yeah, it's out of print, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The internet, though.
Oops, sorry. So you recently went to Anime Boston, I'm pretty sure?
That is correct, yes. Convention in, guess where it's held? Boston, that's right. They actually got one of the biggest conventions in the U.S., as a matter of fact. About 17,000 people were at this convention. The main guest was Nobuo Uematsu, the gentleman who did the music for Final Fantasy.
Oh, gosh.
And so a whole lot of those people... went crazy for that guy.
Did you see him?
That would have been...
I didn't stand a chance at seeing him, man. The line was just ridiculous. No, I had panels to do. I was a featured panelist there. I've been doing panels for several years. I like to go to conventions and present, usually videos of things, and one of the presentations I gave was actually all about anime remakes, which nicely dovetails with one of the topics we're going to touch upon later in this very broadcast.
Oh, my.
That's exciting. So exciting. What's your favorite panel, speaking of which, that you've ever held or went to, perhaps, if it was not one of your own?
My favorite panel that I tend to do, I guess, usually all my panels are terrible rip-off ideas of other, larger, more successful panels done by smarter people.
We want to host a panel, so...
Yeah, I mean, when I host a panel, it's usually a derivative. Like, if there's anime hell, I'll have the panel of doom where I just sort of do the exact same general idea but show different ridiculous clips. I think the panel, you know, as of the last 2 years or so that I've somehow become infamous for as a result of some unfortunate non-intentional events on my part is one called Anime's Craziest Deaths, which is pretty much a panel all about just violent, horrifying death sequences in anime of people getting murdered.
Half of Higurashi on that? I'm just curious.
Higurashi, it has some ridiculous deaths in it. Thinking of, like, you know, the knife in the wall and just sort of headbutting it repeatedly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I actually don't use Higurashi, although I do have it all. I do have all of When They Cry. And was thinking of putting in at least something in there. But, you know, the trouble with Higurashi is they always get, you know, reincarnated. Or it always, like, loops in on itself and they're alive again. And then they're like, were they really killed? I don't know if this counts as a death. But, you know, it is pretty funny when you look at this stuff in a large group of people. There's a lot of bloodthirsty anime fans out there. And so I would say that satiating that bloodlust is perhaps one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I went to your anime's... Did you do the Anime Craziest Deaths at Otakon 1 year?
1 year, yeah. That would be the event that I would say has people associating me with that. It's kind of unfortunate. What happened was they scheduled me in the middle of the day, and it wasn't marked as 18 plus because I didn't think it needed to be. And apparently it does really need to be. So if it does come back, it will be 18 plus and held at night.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I meant that.
Damn. Well, you would remember it got shut down very quickly. Yeah.
That's why I mentioned it.
But yeah.
Shut down.
Yeah. Well, I made a tactical error on my part. Let's just leave it at that.
I don't know. That sounds like bragging rights. Be like, yeah.
It's not really something to be proud of.
So, another random question for you, because I like random questions. What's your favorite color?
Red. It's not related to favorite blood.
Color. Mine too.
But yeah, red is generally my favorite color. I can't explain why. It's probably just maybe it's like the whole Power Ranger thing. Red is always the leader. You know, even as a kid, before I saw Power Rangers, red was my favorite color. I was never a fan of blue or, you know, yellow or any of those other things.
Those colors
as much as red.
They're like, at least with red, you know it's like the badass color. The other ones are kind of like, eh.
Paint a armored mecha red. It does go 3 times faster.
Yeah. It gives it about like 7,000 more horsepower.
No, that's bright yellow. Bright yellow is to add horsepower on, say, a car if you were to go street racing.
So, yet another random question. Dubbed or subbed, and why?
I'm a pretty dyed-in-the-wool subtitled advocate, and to use an adage made created by one Joey Snackpants Esquire, he has a sort of a credo. Bad dialogue is better read than heard. And it makes sense, because in anime, it's very difficult to tell if someone is acting badly when they're speaking a language that you don't speak. A lot of times, there are lines which, if read, you think nothing of. But if someone actually were to say that sentence out loud, you're like, wait a second, that's just goofy. I would say nowadays, the state of acting in anime has gotten much, much better than it was when I first came into anime. You know, the state of dubbing was pretty bad back then. Nowadays, I would say dubs are acceptable. They aren't really great, but they aren't really horrible either. They're just kind of like they get the job done. So, I mean, I usually just stick with, you know, the Japanese subtitles. As a rule, I would say for any entertainment, not just anime, to watch something in whatever the original language it was made in. So most anime is recorded in Japanese, and therefore I say, okay, listen to it in the Japanese. Let's say the original language for something was English. Listen to it in English, and so on and so forth. That's why.
I could agree with that, and I've never thought about that whole bad dialogue is easier read. And when I think about it, I can agree with that, because I can probably think of a lot of lines that I've read and just been like, whatever, but then if I were to say them aloud, I'd be like, this is dumb.
Yeah, the other thing about anime dubbing that always sort of gets on my nerves is, I guess for whatever reason, the philosophy behind the people who dub anime is to overact and be, like, really weird and over the top. But if you think of some of the best anime dubs ever made, that's not the approach they really take with it. I mean, Cowboy Bebop was 10 years ago at this point, more than that. And that was well known because it just sounded like they were doing radio. or it just sounded like regular conversation. If you can put on an anime dub, walk out the room, and then have someone walk in and without even seeing the screen know that it's anime, it's probably not a good dub.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
Okay, is there anything else you want to say or make known about yourself or your podcast to the AAA community, you know, anything?
Sure. I mean, maybe it's probably likely that, you know, most people listening might actually know about my podcast if they search through it through iTunes. Usually if you're searching for podcasts and you type anime, Anime World Order is usually one of the earlier ones that come up. I think as far as our reputation goes, I don't know if it's entirely warranted. I know a lot of people, when I Google my own name, as I am warrant to do, will mistakenly say, oh, the Anime World Order podcast, those guys only care about old anime, those guys don't really care about the new things or whatever. I don't think that's true. I think maybe what is happening or what they're observing is that we kind of like to balance it out. We like to cover new stuff and old stuff. And when you think about it, the vast majority of anime ever made over the last 50 years would count as old, just because anime has been around for so long, as in its modern form anyway.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that.
But, you know, we try and do it. I also think that maybe we get that idea because a lot of the newest stuff we actually review for the magazine. And it's like, I get paid to review these things. I can't give it away for free if I'm supposed to, you know, be getting money for it. So maybe that's, you know, I just want to get that idea out there that we're not a bunch of, you know, crotchety old fogies. Just, you know, Gerald. But, no, he's actually younger than I am. I'm the oldest one. Yeah, that's pretty much the main message I want to get out there. If you think we're not doing our job very well, then, you know, let us know. Because the last thing that podcasts anywhere get is negative feedback. No one I know really gets hate mail. I think the way that podcasting and just the internet in general is that if people don't like something, they just tune out and don't listen. They don't like bother to write in with anything because I guess they rightfully assume that most people will just ignore them.
We've gotten a few write-ins. We've been pretty lucky in that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I don't get that kind of feedback, and you just sort of assume that if you don't get any feedback, everyone's cool with you, you know?
Yeah, I think in our case, the forums help facilitate that a lot with people.
How much forum hate mail do you get for, you know, the really comically high amount of flash embedding on this website?
There's actually no flash on the website.
There's no flash on the website? Wow, it looks very busy.
Thank you.
Wasn't sure about, like, you know, how you pulled this off. I don't know anything about web design. I just take the default, like, WordPress template or Blogger template or whatever and just say, like, that's it. Good enough for me. But this looks like actual work went into it.
Oh, thank you. I did it from scratch. I did all of the graphics aside from the ones that are obviously from animes. But I used ImageReady, which is an Adobe program, and animated GIFs, because you can't access Flash if you're on, like, an iPad or, like, an iPhone or something, and I wanted to make it the most accessible that I could, so I use that over Flash. But
way over my head. I'm just like, cool.
Totally as well over my head. I mean, I know how to use ImageReady a little bit, but I don't know how to use it for real.
I'm kind of addicted to the Adobe programs, but anyways, we're going to take a quick anime news break with Mitsugi. Thank you for letting me interview you, Daryl. It was very fun. I enjoyed myself.
Hey everybody, it's time for your anime news break. First up, some exciting news from Anime Expo. They have announced that the convention will host three of the main staff members of the Eden of the East television anime series, director Kenji Kamiyama, chief animator-director Satoru Nakamura, and producer Tomohiko Ishii, and they will all be guests of honor during the July 1st to the 4th convention in Los Angeles. Anime Expo will also host the American premiere of Funimation's release of the television series. So for those of you living near the LA area, you definitely won't want to miss that one. Go check it out. The Evangelion anime franchise has announced on Thursday that it is co-sponsoring a car racing team in the Super GT 300 Classic Grand Touring Championship Series. The Evangelion RT-01 will debut in Round 3 at the Fuji Speedway during the May 1st and 2nd weekend. The customized Toyota Corolla Axio will have a unique Ava Racing logo and colors inspired by the Evangelion Ava Unit 1 of the anime's main character Shinji Ikari. The car's racing team has won the Super GT Championship Series 4 times in the past. Here's an interesting bit of news. The Japanese conglomerate Bandai has announced that it will open an official Gundam cafe just outside of the Akihabara Japan Railway Station on April 24th. The station is the most well-known way to get to the anime and game-related shops in the Akihabara neighborhood of Tokyo. The cafe will have 60 seats and will be 144 square meters in size. The cafe will serve an exclusive Jaburo coffee blend made from South American coffee beans, as well as Gunplayaki, a large-sized fried takeout dish modeled after the very first plastic Gundam model kit ever sold. The company will also use the cafe to sell and spread the word on the newest merchandise and works from its 31-year-old robot anime franchise. Those of you visiting Japan are definitely not going to want to miss out on this. That's it for the news for now. Back to the show.
Thank you, Mitsuki, for that news. It made my day.
This is how I managed to get up out of bed in the morning.
So, our main topic today is going to be new anime versus old anime, and as I said before, it is suggested by Plixic. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Plixic. Okay. Sorry, Plixic. Your name's difficult for me that it comes out of my mouth. Anyways, so I've been talking a lot. You should talk some.
Okay.
I'm tired of talking.
Well, one of the most obvious things, I think, when you're, comparing the new anime versus old anime, and I guess before you even have the discussion, you kind of have to draw the line, like, how old is anime had to be before it's called old anime? And
it's so relative. I mean, we've got different groups of anime fans now, where you've got a couple of people who are, especially if they're college students, no offense, will hang on and watch anime as it comes out, like, on a per-week basis, such that even a month ago is yesterday's news. 3 months ago, that was last season. That's old to them. To me, old is, pre-80s. But, that would make stuff from even 15, 20 years ago not old in my book. I mean, think about this. Neon Genesis Evangelion is over 15 years old now. Do you call that an old thing? Do you call it old school? If you do, then what does that make Space Battleship Yamato from the 70s? What does that make the original Mobile Suit Gundam? What does that make Astro Boy? It's a difficult line to draw. I think the easiest way to draw a line and make a distinction between new anime and old anime isn't year, but method of production.
I'm just going to say that.
Go for it.
When do you segue into everything being done with wet acetate, and then when you transition from that over to when you're doing it with computers? I think that's kind of
the predominant switch over from cell animation to digital production methods.
Yeah.
But even then, I'd say there's still a middle ground, and I think the point we're arriving at is that it's almost impossible to draw a line. But
I'm just saying, as far as the line I draw, I use based on that because it's got a utilitarian use to it. It's not like an arbitrary line that got drawn. I'm drawing it because this is when this happened, and then these production methods altered what got made and what doesn't get made.
Yeah.
Similarly, around the same time as that switchover from cell to digital was when the OAV market, the direct-to-video market, sort of, for the most part, vanished and disappeared. that's also a big shift as far as the nature of anime and what got made and what didn't get made anymore.
Well, I mean, I tend to agree with you. I mean, not only is the method of production more of like a quantitative type of way to go about it. It's something that you can kind of wrap your fingers around when you're talking about it, rather than just based on people's opinions. Because I mean, you really can't even have a conversation if everybody has a different definition of what old anime is. So laying down that distinction ahead of time is important. But just since we're talking about the difference between the wet acetate versus the computers, a couple things I want to ask is, do you feel like there's a certain charm that's lost? Because I'm a traditionalist, personally, but is there a certain type of charm you think is lost now that we're doing computers and there's, like, the art form's kind of, you know, not done with freehand and it's, and there's a lot of pressure to deliver visuals and, you understand what I'm saying?
I understand exactly what you're saying. I think there is a certain warmth and human element to the fact that when you're drawing multiple cells and maybe shading in something, it's not going to be a perfectly uniform shade of, say, red or black or whatever color, such that once you do it in 24 frames a second or however many limited frames you use, it ends up giving a slight, almost imperceptible flickering effect to it that makes the image seem warmer. By contrast, if you take a paint bucket tool and click fill on a computer to generate your frame, it's perfect. It's a uniform shade of whatever color you've got, and while you can do additional work to make it seem like it was hand-drawn, it's generally much more trouble than it's worth. And so a lot of times, if you look at things that are 100% digitally animated, you can get that idea of things just being just too perfect, too pristine, and sort of impersonal about it, that in a way that things don't look the way they do now. Sorry, let me rephrase that. Things don't look the way they did, you know, back then compared to now, because it's just so much more work to get things to look that way.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely something to be said with the human element.
There are advantages and disadvantages to both. I mean, the animation errors of, you know, the old days are certainly nothing like the animation errors of today, and vice versa. You wouldn't typically see, like, I remember old episodes of G.I. Joe or the Transformers where suddenly someone was wearing a completely different color shirt or someone was colored an entirely different scheme. You'd never see that happen in modern-day production.
Certainly not. I mean, I think, to me, probably the biggest advantage of, the computer-generated anime is definitely think that there are some, specifically some scenes in anime that are would be tremendously difficult or just not even feasible to do in like with wet acetate cells.
Oh yeah, anything that requires you to turn the camera, so to speak, on a stationary object, or you know move the camera in such a way that the background would shift along with the characters in the foreground is tremendously, tremendously backbreaking difficult. Backbreakingly difficult animation to do by hand. Whereas if you've got a 3D model, it's just as simple as rotating it. You know what I mean?
Of what you just mentioned, I think a really... I'm not sure if you've seen Eve No G-Con, the Robot Cafe anime that just finished a couple months ago. But there is almost episode by episode perfect example of what you just said. When they first enter the cafe, they kind of have like this panning, very digital-looking effect that would have been so hard to do with wet acetate. But I wonder. I tend to think that when I'm watching anime, I tend to think that the best way to do it is to have a blend of the two. I'm trying to think of like a perfect example.
Ponyo.
But Ponyo is a pretty good example.
I mean, because you know, Ponyo had. Definitely had like CG, well, not CG, but a computer touch. I hesitate to say CG because
Studio Ghibli is very, very sparing with their use of computer graphics, and they're sort of like the only holdback as far as like a company that's still producing cel-drawn animation. There are some instances of CG. I think a better example than Ponyo, although Ponyo is a good example, Princess Mononoke, which precedes Ponyo by about a little over 10 years, as a matter of fact, at this point, there are some sequences in Princess Mononoke that were done with the aid of computer, but you'd almost never be able to tell which parts, unless someone said that's the part they did with computer assistance. But it's never solely CG, you're right.
There was a, when I visited the Studio Ghibli Museum, like, over the winter, and they actually have a section of the museum for Ponyo, and they have, like, in the middle of, like, this one room, they have a stack of every single cell they used to make the movie.
Well, probably not the actual cells, but, like, boxes that would be the
remember if it was actual ones or not, but, like, it was huge. Like, the pile was staggering. Like, you wouldn't be able to fit it in a car.
Yeah, and the thing is just no one else can afford to do that, because the thing is that as a result of this shift over, in conjunction with the fact that the Japanese economy just isn't what it was back in the 80s and even the early 90s, anime productions have gotten very, very budget conscious. They're always trying to do things cheaper and faster. A lot of animation work is now being outsourced to other countries. Obviously, Korea was a initial start, but now Korea is too expensive, so now they're trying, like, China, Indonesia, India, North Korea, even. I mean, everyone is just trying to cut costs down, and the end result of this is, you know, the animators they got in Japan don't have the skill set that they used to have from doing all that work when they were first starting off. And so that's another perceived issue with new anime versus old. Not just, you know, the use of CG in itself, but just the fact that there's inadvertently sort of a brain drain going on here. And I don't know what's going to become of anime at the rate it's going.
But perhaps
it's happening.
Like one of the things I can think of right off the bat is with the advent of new technology, it allows more people to do things that they couldn't do before, but to do things with less hands. And, of course, I'm thinking of an example who I mention all the time I know, but Makoto Shinkai.
Sure, Makoto Shinkai is a great example. I mean, obviously, you've mentioned it many times before. You know, everyone listening probably knows, you know, obviously he made The Voices of a Distant Star by himself, pretty much.
Right.
The question I have is, where's the other Makoto Shinkais? How come it was just him? Obviously, he was a professional animator first, but, like, what's stopping other people from taking that example? I mean, when Gainax first started off, those were three guys with a 35mm camera who, you know, paint a cell, photograph it, then wipe the cell clear of paint and paint over it because they didn't have other cells, you know? And they made, like, the Daikon 3 and 4 opening animations, which to this day are held up as, like, this ultimate example of, like, these fans made this. But where's, like, the people they inspired, you know? It didn't really, like, usher in this new wave of, like, independent guys doing stuff, you know?
Well, honestly, what I think it would be is the fact that animation, even with computers,
is super hard.
Like, I mean, I've painted cells before, like, fan cells and things like that.
Was Stevie B involved?
What?
Was Stevie B involved? That's my name for Steve Bennett.
Steve Bennett?
Okay, good. Just keep going.
Okay, sorry. But, I mean, I've painted wet acetate cells before and done it the quote-unquote traditional way. And then, I actually think I have one up on my DeviantArt, one of my early ones. And then, anyways, I've played around with doing animation on the computer through Flash and image writing and things like that. And the fact of the matter is, even with all the things the computer can help you with, it still takes hundreds and hundreds of hours. And being an animator, even still today, is a thankless job. You spend hundreds and hundreds of hours, you rarely get very much credit, and your pay, at least in Japan, where most of the animators are that we're talking about, sucks. So it's like, I think the people who have that true passion for it, they're just few and far between, no matter what the technology is, because it takes a lot.
Let's turn this discussion in a slightly different direction. I mean, we've been talking mostly about technical aspects, economic aspects. What about content itself of shows? I think a big difference as far as old anime versus new with regards to content is target audience. When I was a kid, you know, in my teens, that counts as being a kid, anime was predominantly made for children, for general audiences, and that sort of thing. Sort of the inevitable result of if you make a multi-million dollar movie, you've got to maximize your audience. If you make a fairly expensive TV show, you gotta have as many people watching it as possible.
Right.
The otaku level things were generally direct-to-video releases that would be pushing the envelope, so to speak. But, you know, if you wanted to be the hardcore fan, you'd buy the thing that was released, like, direct-to-video only. The state of modern-day anime productions now, almost all of them seem to have just given up on trying to get, like, general audiences watching their show. They seem to pretty much be almost exclusively in the realm of the otaku show. Like, you could never show somebody, like, an average non-anime fan Lucky Star and expect them to understand what the heck is going on.
Yes.
Because it's all in-jokes. It's all references to anime and stuff like that. And even the other things, like this whole moe movement, which is kind of like the thing that's dominating the anime industry and otakudom and that sort of thing, to the outside observer, that stuff, it doesn't really have appeal. It kind of actually looks kind of creepy, as a matter of fact. This whole, like, fixation on little girls and maid outfits or whatever it is, that is a small, core, very dedicated group of people who, yeah, sure, they'll buy, you know, a $100 figurine, but which is better? To have 100 people buy a $80 figure or have 500 people buy something for $20, you know?
You just kind of opened up a can of worms that we kind of discussed. We started to discuss it with Scott from Sarcasm. Animes are more targeted nowadays, and personally, we discussed that we think that it's most of this stuff, most of this moe craze is just to drive merchandise sales. And, I mean, let's face it, most of the figurines you see in, like, stores in Akihabara or whatever, a lot of them are just moe characters. Or if they're not moe character, you know, show type materials, they're ecchi, like Ikitosen. I swear to God, Ikitosen makes up, like, half of all merchandise sales.
That's pretty much just straight-up softcore porn now, that show.
It really
but, I mean, the thing is, though, you also have to consider merchandising tie-ins was always part of anime from the beginning. I mean, certainly toy companies at first were the big sponsors, and so that's why a lot of times there would be so many shows with robots in them that you could sell a toy of. And when Gundam really hit it big was via model kit sales and that sort of thing. So, I mean, yes, merchandising and monetization was always part of the formula, but I think the approach that they're taking now is different than that because, like you said, it's not really a general appeal kind of thing. You can't, there aren't very many people who will go and buy that Ikitosen figure and then proudly put it up in their house so that everyone can see it. It's basically like the guy who, if you walk into their house and they've got like a bunch of Playboy centerfolds framed on their wall, not very many people are that, you know, bereft of tact, let's say.
Yeah, well, how does that make you feel? Like, honestly, I want to ask you how it makes you feel, but let me clarify. It seems like where we're heading is that anime used to be made more for, like, general audiences. Now it's more targeted to, I don't know, like, niches, I guess you could say. But, I mean, you mentioned the general audience type of positioning being in order to, like, it takes more viewers to cover more costs when you're making anime. I mean, maybe they're just replacing the broader audience with more merchandise sales, you know?
I don't know about that, because I think now they're starting to discover that the hardcore otaku market, even in Japan, is maybe 300,000 people. And you can't really sell one thing to that entire group. I think what needs to happen, I don't want the niche things to necessarily go away. I just want there to be some sort of a balance between things being made for the general audiences and things being made for otaku. Before, we used to sort of have this balance. There used to be, again, like I said, television, but also theatrical films and also OAVs. In the modern era, OAVs don't really exist. Theatrical anime films barely exist. I can count the amount that get released in Japan pretty much on one hand, other than like things like Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! Or whatever.
Right.
And now everything is TV. And a lot of times, you know, the default length of a TV show is about 13 episodes. There's a lot of anime that get made that are pretty terrible 13-episode shows that really probably would have worked a whole lot better if it was just a three-part direct-to-video thing. But this, the way it's coming out now is TV is now becoming the otaku market, where before that used to be home video. And I kind of would like to see at least some sort of attempt to try and rebalance the team, so to speak. I think about this. One of the top-selling anime DVDs in America is Afro Samurai.
All right.
How many anime fans online do you see talking about Afro Samurai?
None.
Pretty much none. I mean, all the big sellers, things like Batman Gotham Knight and Halo Legends and that sort of thing, these are the titles that sell, and they sell beyond just the core anime viewing audience here in America. And so that's the kind of stuff, I don't want all anime to be like that, but they need to make more things like that, you know, and have that subsidize at least the crazy things that we care about.
I'm just looking at the anime list, the recent one for the spring lineup. Just kind of plucking my way through here, and you know,
there's not very much on there that I want to watch, to be honest.
There isn't, like, I mean, there's a whole row here. Like K-On! Is obviously Moe. Ikitosen, Shinkoi Hime Muso, Kiss X Sis. I don't even know what that is.
You want to know what that one's about? I'll tell you what it's about. It is about two sisters competing with each other over who can have sex with their brother. And they get into a fight over who has the privilege of sniffing his used boxer shorts. That's the first episode.
Well, hell, Jesus, talk about anime stigma. I mean, how is anime ever supposed to be a socially acceptable medium when this is the kind of shit that gets put out? I mean, at least if it's a general audience type of thing, you know, anime might have a chance in hell. But I mean, when everything is like My Yoi Neko Overrun, which is another one, I mean, I'd be embarrassed to be caught watching that with like a group of people that don't watch anime. I mean, at least give us something normal. Like, let's see, I don't know. Well, we all know Iron Man is going to be pretty acceptable, I think. But I mean, I think we can all say that things like Iron Man and maybe Major, just because it's baseball, are definitely in the minority. I mean, we've talked about anime stigma.
Yeah, Major is a huge, huge series in Japan, and I don't think anyone even cares about it in the English-speaking world. I'd be surprised if it's even been fully fan-subbed. And that's like the fifth or sixth season of that.
I love Major. I've been watching it since I was a sophomore in college, and it is being fan subbed still. It's on. They just finished the 131st episode. But you're right. Like, no one gives a rat's ass here in America. But I think the difference between America and Japan is that while in Japan there actually is a general market, I think that in Japan the niche market makes up a much larger percentage of the overall people that view anime.
I mean, certainly if you were to look at the Japanese TV ratings for anime, the top things are all things that no one in America cares about. It's stuff like Sazae-san, Chibi Maruko-chan, Doraemon,
right,
that sort of thing. I mean, it's only like the top stuff is like maybe Dragon Ball Kai or One Piece, and then things like Pretty Cure and whatever. But the big hot shows that everyone's going crazy about, K-On!, that's not like watched by a whole lot of people. It's just talked about excessively on the internet, and yeah, the merchandise sales come from that. So I mean, it's really the best analogy that I can draw is the American comic book industry, like Marvel and DC and stuff like that. A couple decades ago, millions of people used to buy comic books. They weren't that expensive, and you could buy them at the grocery store. You could buy them at, like, you know, pretty much everywhere. And now they decided, you know what, let's just focus on the hardcore fans. And so now the only place you can really buy comics is in a dedicated comic book shop, and now they're about $2.50 or $4 or whatever an issue. And for them, they consider a big sale now to be 100,000 copies sold. Before, it used to be like, you know, millions of copies sold, and it's just an issue of priorities. Of course, you know, that smaller group of people has very specific tastes, and so people want to know, like, hey, how come so many comics in America are superhero comics? Well, that's why. And we're starting to see the exact same thing happen in Japan, and I don't want to see that happen. I mean, I came into anime because I wanted something different from American animation and from American comics, you know?
Yeah, there's always been a certain, I mean, I completely agree with what you just said. There's always been a certain feel to anime that has made it distinct from other forms of animation, like in America, and I couldn't agree with you more. I wonder, with the trending, the way that it's been trending, anime in general, I wonder, I don't have the answer, but I wonder, there must be some kind of a monetary reason behind the way that the shift that anime's taken. I'm sure that someone figured it out, and they're like, they just think that this is where the money's at now. I don't really understand.
I think it's just the Japanese distribution model is so weird and screwed up that to them, whatever way they do their accounting, they think it's better to sell a very small amount of merchandise for a very high price than to sell a larger quantity for less money.
Well, maybe that's true. I mean, I'd hate to, but it's like, you know, there's a price though. I mean, if that is true and
I don't want it to be true.
Smaller volume equals more money. They're alienating such a large portion of the viewership. They may
exactly
people back.
Because as time goes on, that niche audience, their desires and wants become progressively more specific. We've seen it in the otaku market now. There are people who are really, really into just this one thing, or other people who are really, really into just this other thing, such that the only way you can really make a successful anime is to just load it up with as many different otaku conceits as possible. Now, I'm not saying these shows are bad, necessarily, but does anyone here watch Full Metal Alchemist?
Well,
I couldn't get into it.
Here's the thing about Full Metal Alchemist. I do watch that show, and now I'm watching the new one, but if you look at it, that's the kind of show where, like, it's just so engineered to appeal to all the different otaku groups as possible. Because you've got, like, the whole, like, fangirl yaoi thing that they put the little innuendos in there for. You've got the action. You've got, like, the people who are really crazy about trains and the people who are really crazy about the military and really crazy about girls in glasses and all these different, very specific otaku kinks. They just sort of have to take as many of them as possible and throw it into one show, and that's how you have a hit now. Even Gundam was originally, like, still is one of the most recognizable things to this day. You saw they had the big life-sized Gundam that they built.
Yeah.
4 million people went to see this thing. I'll tell you right now, 4 million people aren't watching Gundam nowadays because, you know, even Gundam 00, which is the, you know, the second latest of these things, was made to be like, okay, we got to get as many different otaku groups as possible. So get like a person who's known for drawing shoujo and boys love stuff to do the character designs for all these pretty boys, and then get people to draw like a bunch of really slutty looking girls or whatever, and have robots that are like this. And people just aren't—they're burned out on that thing. You know, it's just like, why can't they just? I mean, there always has to be a commercial aspect to anime. I understand that it's not purely art form. It's a profit-driven thing. But, you know, do some sort of balance. Make your show first, and then, like, kind of figure out how to monetize stuff. Because it wasn't this crassly commercialized, or maybe it was. Maybe it was always that, and it was just crassly commercialized for things that I happen to like. In which case, I say bring it back to that, because I hate stuff that's different.
Yeah, we've got these 4 million Gundam fans have been alienated over the past decade, going to the, making their pilgrimage to the giant Gundam robot. But just to shift gears for a minute, you mentioned that you had done a panel on anime remakes, and I was kind of interested to hear what you had to say about that.
Yeah, we've been noticing as the years have gone by, in all entertainment forms, the big hot trend is remaking, or, you know, modernizing or doing a new version of, like, a past property from back in the day. Whether it's American movies like Transformers or soon to be, like, the A-Team, and, there's G.I. Joe. For anime, they're bringing back a whole bunch of older properties as sequels, as remakes, as reboots, and that's the like. Presumably because, like, a lot of the people who grew up watching these things are now people who've got money to spend. And so, hey, they're feeling nostalgic for their childhood. Hey, how about we do a new Mazinger Z or a new Space Adventure Cobra or the like? And some of these are meant to be, like, introducing a new generation to this property, but most of them are not. Most of them are just like, here's the straight-up sequel or whatever to this thing that came out decades ago. And the panel I did at Anime Boston was specifically just remakes. Like, you don't need to know anything about the previous thing in order to watch this. This is its own thing. And there's actually quite a lot of those, too. And in that case, the big difference that I was seeing was the stuff we talked about previously, things like the shift over to digital animation, the use of CG, the use of, you know, very hastily produced animation just to get something on TV. My favorite example from that panel, the first anime I ever saw subtitled was this cartoon called Area 88. Now, this is this old 80s thing released direct-to-video that was all about jet planes fighting a war in the Middle East. Anyone's old enough to have a Super Nintendo, to me a Super Nintendo is not an old system, but it's like, wow, Super Nintendo, that was like 20 years ago.
The best systems.
Yeah, I think so too. There was a game they released in America called UN Squadron. Well, that was Area 88. They just renamed it for America. They did a remake of this in 2004, and the trouble is that no one working in anime now knows how to draw mecha, knows how to draw planes, knows how to draw robots in the traditional 2D fashion. There aren't enough people anymore. Mamoru Oshii, very famous director, he made a movie called The Sky Crawlers recently. Right. That's also about jet planes fighting. All those sequences are in CG because no one knows how to draw planes anymore and animate them properly. So they have to render them as 3D models. Of course, CG is expensive. And so when you do it for TV, it can look very, very cheap. And the Area 88 TV series, I love the story still. It's just it, budget-wise, it looks very, very cheap. And so I think for remakes, sometimes they lose something. Sometimes the pacing is off. Sometimes it's just not as flashy or spectacular. And other times I think they do a really good job. Like, I don't want to just be a negative Nancy. Let me give you a good example of one. There was a TV show called Toward the Terra recently.
Toward the Terra.
Toward the Terra. And this was a remake of an old movie from 1980. The TV series expanded upon that, modernized the look of it a bit, but still kept things recognizable that you could still see this was the original stuff. Really cool sci-fi, psychic kind of story. I reviewed it on my podcast as well, you know, years ago at this point. But that actually got released in America by Bandai. I'm guessing nobody bought it because, hey, it's a good show, and it's a show I like, and therefore no one buys these things. But, you know, Toward the Terra was a good modernization effort. Shin Mazinger Z was a neat modernization effort, but it was done in this very over-the-top melodramatic style that a lot of people just look at and go, oh, robots, I don't like that stuff. And that's really the state of anime at this point. Mecha used to be what drove everything. Like, anime, sci-fi, those kind of went hand in hand. And nowadays, robots are not what fans want to see, at least not in America. And so when they do remakes of things, a lot of them, since they're things from back then, tend to be robot things. It's like, here's the new Kotetsujin Jig. Here's the new Getter Robo, of which there have been quite a few. You know, here's the new Raiden. And these are all things that no one in America cares about. There's still maybe a nostalgia audience in Japan, but it's hard to get people into that stuff here.
Oh, I mean, I wonder. I mean, you make it sound like they're making, and maybe it's true. Maybe you make it sound like the Japanese animators are just making anime for people in America now. It's like,
they are and they aren't. I think with the Moe thing, that's exclusively for Japan.
Oh yeah.
And whereas the stuff for America, there needs to at least have some consideration for it, but I know I don't want them to only make things like with America in mind, because when Japan thinks they know what America wants, some of the stuff they make is just like really terrible. Like, do you remember that SD Gundam Force that was on the Cartoon Network?
God, yes, awful.
It was terrible, but they made that for America. That was what they thought that America wanted to see. And even years before that, there was a pilot they'd shopped around called the Doozy Bots, which was like this sort of get-along gang American cartoon, but they all turned into little SD Gundams. And for some reason, that never got picked up.
Yeah, well, how about, I mean, 2 points. First one is, God help us, there's an SD Gundam Son Goku Den. God.
Oh, yeah, well, the SD Gundam Romance of the Three Kingdoms, that's not for America. I mean, the Romance of the Three Kingdoms is pretty much big in China because it's one of their biggest works there is. It's one of, like, I think the four great classics. I could be wrong about that.
Where are the other? God help us.
But, yeah, I mean, the Romance of the Three Kingdoms anime has been the big trend, especially for this latest season. What fascinates me is that for all those that get made, no one's actually fan-subbing the real Romance of the Three Kingdoms anime that they're making. There is one that's just straight up called The Romance of the Three Kingdoms. It is a Chinese-Japanese co-production, and all these people subtitling this Koihime Muso and all this junk, they don't want to touch the real one.
Got
there was one a year ago called Soten Koro. Great show. And people abandoned it. They didn't really bother to stick with it. And that was, like, you know, the actual more close to the real deal. But that's not what people want to see. They want to see, like, you know, some very thinly veiled excuse to have cute girls.
Dude, I tell you, Shin Koihime Muso is one of the most disgusting things I've ever watched. I'm just going to say it. It's freaking horrible.
It's like, Ikki Tosen is also Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Yeah, but okay, that's true. Fair enough. And Ikki Tosen is something I consider guilty pleasure for myself. But at least Ikki Tosen doesn't pretend to be something it's not. Shin Koihime Muso is like this. You expect, like, in the beginning, they have, like, this quote-unquote battle where they're, like, routing thieves, and they don't do jack shit in that whole show. Like, at least in Ikki Tosen, they're, like, kicking each other and shit and having some fights.
Yeah, at least what you see is what you get for Ikki Tosen. I mean, it's trash and it's exploitative, but at least it makes no bones about what it is.
Yeah.
I can sort of respect it for that sense, even though it's kind of fails even as fan service for me. Though, in later seasons, I do have assurances that you get to see the pink. So there is that.
Well, they're showing a lot of nudity in this new season. But
up sex in the later seasons, yeah.
Here's a good example of anime maybe made for America, Hero Man. I mean,
oh, yeah, Hero Man!
Good lord, he's in front of an American flag in the picture.
Yeah, I want Hero Man, like, on Disney XD or something like that. That show, it's very, like, Stan Lee totally adhered his formula to a Japanese show. But you know what? He's good at that formula. He's still, even though he's like 90 or whatever, that show it's entertaining for what it is. Although it is, you know, not like gonna blow your mind. It's very, it's average, but it's average in a way that you don't really see anymore.
Yeah. Well.
Well, I think honestly we could probably talk for about 10 hours on this subject.
Oh, I definitely can.
And still probably not even, like, hit the proverbial tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, we haven't really scratched the surface, to be honest.
Unfortunately, so that our podcast is in 10 hours, we should probably wrap it up, but of course there is the forums. If you go to our main webpage, aaapodcast.com, and click the forums button, please join. We'd love to hear from you, and you can continue discussing this there. Rant about what we think.
I mean, honestly, you could tell I was kind of getting into it back there. So we'll just have to have you on again, Daryl, so we can finish the discussion.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, in the meantime, I'm on Twitter. I check that pretty often. Twitter.com/DarylSurratt. Hopefully, if they get my name right here in the notes, you'll be able to find that link, no problem.
Excellent. So, we're going to take another quick news break with Mitsuki, then we'll come back with some reviews, and that'll be that. So, see you in a few, and by you, I mean person listening.
Welcome back to your second dose of anime news, anime fans. Yoshitaka Amano, the artist famous for designing the characters in the Final Fantasy game series, is directing his first anime film, called Zaun, for worldwide release next year. It is a 3D film that begins at the end of the 19th century, when a samurai named Zaun is led to a world in an alternate dimension to battle evil. In addition to directing his first anime, Amano also conceived the story and drafted the original art for the film. So I guess you'll be able to see a little bit of Amano's flair throughout the artistic style of the movie. For those of you that are a big fan of Yoshitaka Amano, keep your eyes out for the film Zaun to release next year. Look out, Gundam fans! It seems that Bandai Entertainment has announced that it has set a June 2010 release date for the Mobile Suit Zeta Gundam, A New Translation movie trilogy. These films were originally announced back in 2006, however, an official release date had not been announced. Similar to what the first Mobile Suit Gundam movie trilogy did for the first Gundam television series, the Zeta Gundam movies compile the Zeta Gundam television series with the majority of the original cast comprising their roles. The movie is also supposed to feature digital remastering and some additional new footage, so for all you Gundam fans, it should be a special treat. That's it for our anime news for today. You're gonna have to just wait till next week. Back to the show.
Thank you, Mitsugi, once again for that exhilarating news break.
What I live for.
Well, we already covered that, but you just make my day with it.
You're welcome.
Awesome. So you have two reviews for us. It's going to be a Mitsugi heavy review time.
Yeah. So you guys can chime in and like talk to me and stuff. You know, I don't really believe in the whole like you can't be interrupted while you're reviewing theory. So. Feel free to.
That's a terrible theory. Who subscribes to that? Then why not just write it down and post it online? Podcasting is about discussion, I say.
I completely agree with you, 100%. Couldn't agree with you more.
But all opposing opinions are welcome, so please don't feel like you can't voice them to us.
Yeah. Anyway, so the first I'm cleaning up the old season, last season, starting off with an anime called Okami Kakushi, which I think had maybe more hype than any anime from last season.
Really? Because I've never even heard of it.
Really? Maybe it was just, like, people, maybe I was just in the right place at the right time. Well, good, you haven't heard of it, so this will be great. Okami Kakushi is about a town called Jogamachi, and the town is divided into the new town and the old town. That's pretty important, but I'll get to that later. There's a boy named Hiro, and he moves there to go to school. His dad is like a studying professor slash writer, and his sister is like this character that really doesn't have much importance, but she's in like a wheelchair. She just kind of serves as like a background character. And he gets to the town, and all these people are like obsessed with him. I swear to God. There's this one girl named Isuzu who is the most annoying.
She's a Korean car.
Yeah, Isuzu.
Actually, I think Isuzu is a Japanese manufacturer, but whatever.
Whatever. She's really annoying. She's all over this kid. She's just obsessed with him, like hugging on him. Like that's all they do for the first like four episodes. I about gave up on this anime because it was hugging.
I'm so sick and tired of like the girls who fall in love with people because they have a pulse.
I just wanted to slap the bitch, you know. But whatever. You know, I guess it's like love at first sight. I don't know. Whatever. But people are disappearing in the town, and
this is the Wicker Man, then, right?
Is that with Nicolas Cage?
Yes. Well, that was the remake, was with Nicolas Cage. But yes, it's The Wicker Man, exactly.
You have to let me know if it is, because I'd be interested to know. But, like, this anime has, like, a dark atmosphere right from the get-go, because, like, the pictures like, that were all posted for it before it came out was this, like, moe-looking chick with a scythe. And, you know, I'm thinking, like, Higurashi and stuff. And ironically enough, this anime is about as close to Higurashi as you can get. Without being related to the plotline, really. And
now, even though I've never heard of it, thanks to the internet, I'm now an expert on it, and I'll tell you it takes place in the same year as Higurashi, because Higurashi takes place in 1983. I have no idea if that's true. I'm just throwing stuff out there.
Is that true? Because I didn't know that.
I made it up, really. It's all just rumor and superstition based on our Google search by the name.
Oh.
Okami Kakushi, it means kidnapped by wolves.
Yeah, okay. Well, that makes sense, because that's kind of what it's about. But the Higurashi, the comparison, you've got a kid that transfers to a new school, a.k.a. Keiichi from Higurashi. There's friggin' cicadas everywhere chirping in this anime. People dying everywhere. People are disappearing, and, you know, but honestly, for the first half of this anime, it seems to be a lot more about Hiro's harem than it is everything else. In fact, Isuzu's brother, the girl's brother, is obsessed with him, too. And it's like, what the hell is happening? This kid is like, you know, it's your typical, like, nerd fantasy, I guess. You know, all the people are, like, all over you. But, after about 4 episodes of fluffy BS, you actually get to some story. And, you know, I'm going to just kind of... This anime sounds terrible unless I give more of the plot. Normally I don't go too far into it because I don't like to spoil things, but...
Yeah, I don't like to spoil stuff in general either.
But, I mean, this anime is like, you're going to give up on it if you don't know that there's better shit coming, so... basically, the people in the old town... The reason that people are disappearing is that their people in the old town are basically monsters, and they can transform into, like, these red-eyed versions of themselves, so that they, like, they transform and... They don't really look any different, but their eyes turn red and they get, like, stronger. And the reason that Hiro is, like, upset, people are obsessed with him, is because he's getting off, like, this scent that all the citizens of New Town have. And the scent attracts people from Old Town, but Hiro's is much stronger. It's, like, irresistible to the people in the Old Town. So that's why people are disappearing, because... Sometimes the people in the Old Town just can't resist it anymore, and they just, like, attack and abduct people from Old Town. And once you're, like, bitten by one of the people of Old Town, you're basically a monster, too, so it's kind of like vampire stuff going on. That's the story of this anime, by the way. They don't even, like, tell you that until, like, the 9th episode. It's like, what are they thinking? I hate it when they try to cram all of the plot line into, like, the last, what, like, 2 episodes.
You know why they do that, right? It's because they don't even know what the story is until the last 2 episodes. They're like, oh, wait, we've been building up all this stuff as mysterious. We better pay it off somehow. But we didn't know what the solution was until we wrote it. Actually, this one is probably exempt from that, because if it's from the same guy who wrote Higurashi Rikishio 7, that means it's based off of a visual novel, which is to say, like, one of those quote-unquote games that isn't really a game at all. It's more just, you know, you watch through it.
You read it and click and click.
So, I mean, yeah, the story here must have been done firsthand, and then adapting it into anime was really just a question of what did they have to cut out.
I don't know what they cut out. You know, there's probably, like, tons of porn that they cut out, but the villain, Sakaki, he's kind of, like, skulking around the town the whole time, and... I'm not going to tell you, like, why he's skulking around, because that's too much of a spoiler, probably, but, that's basically the story of the show. I mean, a couple of things, the anime, this is one of those new animes, it's all computer, and, I was kind of bummed out by it, really, because it has this dark feel to it, and you expect it to be this, like, really foreboding, you know, anime where there's all this evil shit happening behind the scenes, but really all you get is, like, every other episode, there's like a 1-minute scene at night where, like, there's some guy running from this group of people with scythes, and then they get killed, and that's it. And there's, like, it's not even interesting, because the moe chick just kind of jumps in the air and lands on them and cuts them open, and, you know, you don't even really get to see any of the violence, and that's it. It's just kind of the same scene over and over again, and that's not really that interesting. It's about as uninteresting as a scene where someone gets hunted down and killed as you can get. You'd be amazed, I guess, how they can pull that off, but... the anime, it's really not, like, all bad, though. I found the end of it to be pretty engaging, really. Like, once they start telling you what's going on, it's mildly enjoyable, but you're gonna have to sit through, like, 7 or 8 episodes of nothing, basically, to, really get anything out of it. That's the bad thing about it. But the music is alright. It's got a pretty good opening theme. The animation's pretty good, I guess. But when all things are said and done, I would probably tell you to pass on this anime. I mean, there's lots of animes out there that are, quite frankly, try to do a similar type of concept and do a lot better. I mean, I know that... I'm always surprised by how many people haven't seen Higurashi. I mean, just go watch that. And for that matter, go watch, like, Umineko, Nonoaku Koroni, if you want to watch, like, people get killed violently. Because
that's sort of the second season of Higurashi after a sense, right? Not really exactly the same. It's like he did that one as well.
He did it as well. I didn't find it's not really related at all, and it's nowhere near as good. But like if you're watching Okami Kakushi to get like violent like deaths and stuff, you're not gonna get it because there's really like hardly even any blood in the whole show. It's just if you're gonna finish it, it's because you're interested in what's really happening and you want to watch it long enough to find out. But if that's all there is, I'm gonna give it 3 Joga Wolves out of 5. And the
I don't know what that means. I guess it's a rating, but it doesn't sound like it's 3 out of 5. Like
that's kind of my average.
It's average. It's like a we wouldn't say don't watch it, but we also wouldn't tell you to watch it.
Okay. I'm of the opinion that like the average stuff is really the worst stuff because, like you said, it's like you can spend your time doing something better, especially with so many choices out there. That's just me. I mean, I like the things that like you know the real ones to watch are either like the I don't like ratings. I'm real bad at rating stuff. But like if you were to go by your rating system, let's say like you know the 4 or 5 out of 5 or like the 1 or 0 out of 5. It's like these are the ones to watch. It's like the real stuff that'll burn down and burn you out on anime is watching middling stuff.
Because when it gets really shitty, you can just have fun watching it and laugh at it.
Yeah, if you get really shitty, you can laugh at it. You can, you know, make fun of it with your friends or whatever. But if it's just, like, it's not that bad to make fun of it, and it's not, like, so good that you can get into it, it's just like, and that's really what kind of, like, burns you out.
It's funny you should say that, because, like, I feel like I've been giving out a lot of 3s and, like, 3.5s lately. Because
I try to just avoid that kind of stuff entirely. Personally,
that's like a lot of the new anime from like last season was a lot of like just anime that wasn't good enough that you were interested at all. You were just kind of bored watching it, but it wasn't bad enough that
you stop watching it.
Well, not even that. It wasn't even bad enough that you could have like fun and joke about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the law, like the bell curve distribution, the law of averages, you know, it implies that the majority of things that get made are going to be average, you know. It's only a small amount of things that are going to be really, really good or really, really terrible. And fortunately, I think so much anime has gotten made that you could just ignore that whole middle of the bell curve, you know, out 2 standard deviations and still just, like, take the endpoints and just stick with that. And you'll have so much anime to watch that you'll never get around to it. Like, I guess now I know why I never heard of this show because apparently it was one of those things that people watched when it was out, and then the second it was over, they forgot about it entirely.
That's pretty much it, honestly. Thankfully, the second anime I'm going to review is much, much, much better. The second anime I'm going to review is called Cross Game. Have you heard of Cross Game?
Oh, yeah, I know all about Cross Game. All
right, good. Cross Game is immense. Honestly, Cross Game is the best anime that's been airing. It's been airing for, Christ, almost a year. And frankly, it was, other than, like, in my opinion, other than the Hajime no Ippo New Challenger, it probably, in my opinion, was the best anime that was consistently running almost every season. So, yeah, Cross Game, it started airing about a year ago. It came out in April, it came out, like, exactly a year ago today, pretty much, practically. But it's about this kid named Kitamura Ko, who, See, this is one reason why I love sports anime is because they kind of transition you from, like, their childhood into, like, adulthood, and they grow as it goes along, and you just mentioned that, but that's one of the things that this show does. It starts out with Kitamura as a little kid, and, you know, there's a baseball overtone to the whole show, but this show is really more about the characters and, like, the, you know, the slice-of-life aspect to it. But
well, I'll be careful with using that term slice of life, since that refers to a totally different style of literature that isn't depicted in anime, but I'll let it slide for now.
Okay, as I've seen animes that are called slice of life genre.
Right, everyone's just sort of misusing that term.
Okay.
I just want to get that out there, but yeah.
Well, anyway, the anime revolves around Ko and this girl who, he's basically born to marry this girl named Wakaba. Wakaba has this dream of Ko pitching in the Koshien tournament. And
the Koshien tournament, just to you know, give people some context, that's like the high school World Series of Japan. Think of it that way, or is it middle school? I think it's high school.
Yeah, they talk about it in so many animes. It's high school. And
okay, and yeah, this is like a big, big thing. High school baseball, kind of like how college football is big in America, or, you know, maybe high school football, even if you live in Texas. Now, Koshien is like the big time.
The big time, yeah. It's the site of the National High School Championship Finals for baseball, and the show basically, it runs its course from them as children all the way up into the Koshien tournament. And the big thing about this show is that, first of all, I wanted to review it again because the first, I had given it a 4.5 after the first season was over, but I felt like since the second season was, you know, even better than the first one, I felt like I needed to give it a revision. The second season has more of an emphasis on Azuma, who is like the all-star batter for the team. And one of the things about the show that really makes it shine more than any other aspect of it is the relationships that the characters have with one another. They bring in a character in the show that looks just like Wakaba.
There's a very similar plot device used in Touch, you know, 20-some years ago, 25 years ago. There was a twins involved there.
That makes sense. The director and everything, or the creator. But you've got, like, Ko is interested in this new girl. Azuma is interested in Aoba, Tsukishima, Wakaba's sister. And in addition to the baseball, because the baseball really only fills about, I don't know, 30% of the show's content, you've got just this wonderful balance of relationships between the characters, and they kind of grow as the show goes along. You know, you want certain characters to end up with other characters, and you've got, like, the romance-drama aspect to it that I think really works well in a lot of sports animes, because sports kind of lends itself well to drama to begin with. And, you know, after the first season, they go through another year of high school, and they're giving another shot at the Koshien tournament, because really all the characters, well, the characters that knew Wakaba want to make her dream come true. And so they go through another summer tournament to gain entry to the Koshien tournament. And I'm not going to, like, spoil too much of the results, but I will say that this anime has one of the most perfect endings that I've seen in recent memory, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to revise my score on it, because I was happy with everything. Everything right down to, like, the way that the relationships ended up, to the way that the tournament ended up, the way that they closed it out. I just thought everything was done very well. It really is a character-driven show, but in a good way, not like the Moe shows that have, like, these shallow characters that are just terrible. It's just, they're really believable characters. Aoba obviously has, like, a lot of feelings for Ko, but she's too embarrassed to show it because she's kind of like the tomboy tough type and doesn't want to, you know, admit it, and I don't know. It's just really wonderful. The show definitely gets a, five clovers out of five. I mean, if you haven't seen the show, and you have to see it, even if you don't like sports, it's not really about the sports, as you said.
But yeah, I mean, Mitsuru Adachi is totally the master. I mean, yeah, he probably only can draw about three different faces, but you're very right about the ending being sort of a thing that kind of can make or break whether or not you like a show or dislike a show. It affected your rating, whether or not you, to the point that you said you wanted to revisit it now that you see the whole thing. So much anime now has such disappointing, lackluster endings that I don't typically watch anime as it comes out anymore. I'm just like, I'm sick of being burned. I always, like, wait until a show is done and over, mm-hmm. and wait and see, like, enough people saying, like, was the ending good or did the ending suck? That's all I want to know. Don't give me any details. And then if the ending was good, that's when I'll start thinking and watching something, because there's nothing I hate more than a show that starts off like it could be really cool and then it just disappoints you. And that's so much anime that gets made now, and Cross Game is not one of those, thankfully.
Yeah, it certainly is not. I had absolutely no qualms with the end of the show. I wish it had been longer, because it's just like the kind of, I mean, I could have watched it forever, but
it's very predictable in a lot of ways, and it's also, in a lot of ways, stuff comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's very, very super well made.
Yeah. So I'm glad I got the opportunity to. Oh, by the way, the cat in the show is really cute, too. Nomu. Really cute. Really, really cute cat. But that's pretty much the wrap-up of the episode. This has been one of the more enjoyable recordings that I've done in a while. So thanks for coming on the show with us.
Thanks for letting me be on.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't been so, like, animated talking in a while. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, you guys bounced off each other nicely.
Yeah, that was good.
It was. Yeah? again, once more to reiterate, you can find us at aaapodcast.com. We're on Facebook, iTunes, Mevio, the ADDnetwork.net.
All over the place.
All over the place, Twitter and more. If you go to our main website, though, we have pretty much links to all of those things. So you can find us that way. And now taking us out is going to be Kimi no Kiyoku from the anime Hakuoki Shinsengumi Kitan by the artist Mao.
Yeah, so thanks again for coming on the show, Daryl. It was really, honestly, really enjoyable.
All right, nice to hear it. Tattoo.